This podcast is brought to you by Creative Capital. To learn more about Creative Capital and the artists we support, visit www.creative-capital.org. This is an artist-to-artist podcast with Penny Lane, a film video awardee from our 2012 class, interviewing Marshall Curry, a 2008 film video awardee.
Hey.
Hello.
Where are you?
I live, well, Marshall, I'm in Waterville, which is about 5 hours north and west of where you are right now.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. I moved to Central New York this past summer for a teaching job.
Oh, you're at Colgate, right?
Correct, yeah.
Oh, nice, nice. Is that
yeah.
fun?
It is. You know, it is. And I'm just kind of working through, like, the sort of reality of living, I don't know, being, like, the only filmmaker for, like, 300 miles around or something. I'm not sure. I haven't done a complete survey, but I think that's about right. And there's some things about that that are good, and there's some things about that that are, you know, probably guess are kind of lonely or
yeah.
have the potential to be a little bit lonely. But and I like my job.
Is it a production? Are you teaching production or a theory class, or what are you teaching?
I teach video art. So, yeah,
okay.
I'm in a studio art department, and I teach video in that context. And, you know, it's a little kind of flexible. Like, I can teach a documentary class or whatever.
Yeah.
But there is a kind of, like, larger frame around it that's an art frame, which that's what I did. I mean, I went to art school. I didn't go to film school.
Okay. And where did you do that?
RPI.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, where they have this, like, kooky electronic arts MFA program.
Uh-huh.
Like, most people there were doing, like, robots, that spray paint, you know, like
right.
interactive sound installations with LED sculptures and things. And I was like, I was making movies.
Right.
And that was fun. That was really, really fun. But yeah, I didn't come from, did you go to film school?
No. I studied religion in college, so.
That's what I thought.
Took a winding path to get here.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think you really, I'm not really sure it does that much for you to study film. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I go back and forth. I mean, I sort of, my friends that went to film school have sort of a foundational knowledge that I feel like everything I know has been from reading books or talking to people or just sort of spending months and months and months shooting and editing. And so,
right. So you feel like in some ways, like, there could have been some shortcuts, but
probably. Although I also think that, I don't know, like, okay, so I could have spent 2 years doing that. That seems like an awful long time. When,
sure.
I mean, that's, I made Street Fight, basically, my first movie.
Yeah, that's kind of like
instead of doing that.
Yeah,
yeah. And frankly, I spent, you know, 1,000 hours learning how to edit and hundreds of hours learning how to shoot instead of sitting in a room having somebody talk to me about the theory of negative space or whatever. That's like, okay, but so I go back and forth on it. Sometimes I think that it was good to just spend the money that I would have spent and the time I would have spent just making something. And then other times I think, oh, it would have been fun to take a history of cinematography class or
sure.
you know, that kind of stuff.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, I agree with you, but I also think it's like in some ways you would have gotten yourself a different kind of peer group in school that you get the same thing, though, by, like, making a film, going out, like, to festivals and stuff, if you, like, develop. Did you do that? But did you feel like when you were taking Street Fight around to, like, film festivals that first year that you were part of a cohort?
Definitely.
Who was in, I'm very interested in this. Who
and
was,
it's very funny because it's sort of like your freshman year in college where you
absolutely.
Become friends with you. So, like, you know, Eugene Hernandez was just starting IndieWire. So when I see him, it's like, hey, Eugene, what's going on? And I think of him as, like, the guy who was out at all the festivals trying to write stories for this little website he was doing. And, like, you know, I don't know, just like a bunch of people like that, other filmmakers who I feel like I have a connection with. Heidi and Rachel had Boys of Baraka was out then, yeah. And Ashley and David. David had just done the
Mardi Gras.
Mardi Gras, yeah.
Mm.
I don't know. And I mean, you know, like Yancey Ford became a good friend then because I got to know her. She, you know, Street Fight was on BOV, and so she you know, she loved it when I just had a trailer of it.
Right.
And she was like, oh, yeah, you should totally make it. You should totally make it. And she was trying to get Kara Mertes, who at that point was over at POV. She was running POV.
Mm-hmm.
And so that, you know, so I got to know Kara before Sundance, before Ford, whatever. Like, she was, I mean, being the head of POV was a thing as well, but it was a different thing. And, like, Simon at POV. Like, all the POV people, mm-hmm. I feel like a real personal connection to that mm-hmm. is different from just sort of professional people who I meet now most of the time.
Yeah, I wonder what that is. I wonder if that's specific to, like, it being your first film. And, like, I don't know. For me, I felt like every single person that was interested in my movie last year, I was like, it was, like, mind-blowing, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
So it was a little bit different than maybe the way some people think about those relationships. Like, I wasn't really – I was, like, so amazed that anyone cared.
That's exactly how I felt with you. No, I mean, I thought, like, oh, I'll make this little thing, and I'll show it to my friends, and we'll get some pizza and a projector, and I'll show my friends this thing that I've been working on.
So what happened, like, when you – what was the point where it changed from this thing that you were making that you were going to show to some friends and get some pizza, and then it became, like, the movie that it became? What was the biggest, like, turning point, do you think? Like,
there was 1 week when it played at Tribeca and Hot Docs. Those two used to overlap. Mm-hmm. And it won the audience award at Tribeca and the audience and the jury prize at Hot Docs. And it was like both of those happened within 48 hours. And, like, I wasn't going to the award ceremony for Tribeca because was like, why would I go to an award ceremony? That's sort of silly.
Yeah.
And they called me and were like, so are you coming to the award ceremony? And I was like, oh, no, I actually wasn't planning to. And they're like, well, we think you should come to the award ceremony. It's like, well, I was going to go out to dinner and, you know, it's just like a bunch of people dressing up and it's not really my scene. And they're like, you really need to come to the award ceremony. So, I mean, that was really how I saw that stuff. And when that happened, that was when I sort of thought, oh, well, maybe this isn't just like an embarrassing
little thing that
I made by myself. Yeah.
So you were still, so even when you got to the point where you were, you got into those festivals, you were still sort of like, all right, like, you had a certain vision of the future and it didn't include what it really became.
Right. Each thing that happened, I thought, well, that was the cherry on top.
Right.
You know,
like, that's,
wow,
yeah, there's
I got
the
into
extra
a festival.
Credit.
That's
yeah.
awesome. And I'm like, oh, you wanted a prize at a festival. And then, you know, and then somebody's like, oh, you should qualify for an Oscar. And I was like, what are you even talking about?
Like, yeah, no, totally. Like, that's just crazy.
Right. I was like, Oscars, that's like, that's that thing I see on TV.
That's a terrible show that I don't watch.
Yeah, I was like, halfway, I didn't even know that there were documentary Oscars. Like, that's how unplugged into that whole world I was.
Yeah.
And I think that's part of the reason that you become so close with those people, because all those people that like you, they just like you, you know? And they like your movie because they just like your movie.
Yeah.
And you're just sort of friends.
It feels so genuine.
And I still think that's the case with, you know, you can sort of feel that. But there are also, you know, now it's like a little bit more of a hustle. Not that other people, but just like, okay, now, like, people are networking with me and I'm networking with people. And that can sort of take the shine off of, you know. I mean, not that much. It's definitely not like Hollywood or like the fiction world or whatever, but, you know, and when I go to a party or whatever and see people whose movies I really like or who I just like as people or people who I knew during that time, it's, you know, you can still feel that, there are good people in this documentary community, but
I feel like there's mostly good people in the documentary community.
I think that's right, and I honestly think that's because documentaries are so hard to make, and there's no money, and there's no glory, and there's no glamour, and so, like, the only reason anybody makes a documentary is because they really want to make a documentary, unlike fiction that has all these, you know, glory and fame and money. And
there are some people who make documentaries perhaps in that way or, like, with that in mind, but they really are the distinct minority as far as I can tell when I've been out on the festival circuit this year.
Yeah.
So it really, like, for me, it's completely being, like, going out with this film and, like, going to Full Frame and Hot Docs and, like, all these different festivals and these different experiences completely raised the bar for like what I consider to be like an interesting person. I feel like I'm really frustrated with my life right now because the experience, the kinds of quality conversations and just, you know, just people that I got to meet on in that world was so high and so interesting because, like you said, it's like, to me, it's like, I finally felt like I was like, oh, these are my people. These are the best people.
Right.
Like, these are the best people I could possibly find because they're super smart and intellectual, but they're not like walled off in some like sort of academic fortress. They're like out in the world.
They're trying
like,
to communicate stories to people. And
And I spent a lot of time like kind of floating around in the art world, and I'm sure you have too. I mean, at least minimally with your creative capital connections, right? So, and I have some sort of reservations about that world where I'm like, oh, I like this world a lot, but it's also can kind of fall into a certain kind of snobbery that manifests as kind of, again, like a not openness in terms of communicating with like people.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? So I feel like all of a sudden I was like, oh, these are people. And then there's this kind of thing where it's like mostly people that are just on a wing and a prayer, following some kind of incredible passion and getting so deep into it that, you know, it transforms their lives and they come back with this amazing gift. And I'm just like, these are the best people. Like I never felt so much like anywhere I went that I would just love everyone I met. And it was just completely true.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, then you come home and you're like, oh, I got to make another movie. That's going to take, I don't know, 5 years or something.
Yeah.
Like, is this what my life is going to be like now? I'm going to spend like 3 to 5 years alone in my house, like banging my head against a computer screen so that I can go back out and like meet people again. Is that what I'm doing?
Right.
I don't know. Because, I mean, your movies, at least you like make movies where you go out into the world and meet people. Like, I keep making these historical things and like archival things. Like, I don't even have to leave the house for the production part of it.
Right.
Like it's just like the part where you're editing all the time.
Right. Well, and this new one that I'm doing is mostly archival. It's based around a single interview that I did, like a sort of 12 hours, 14 hours of interviews with this guy and then intercut with his footage. So it has been much more the archival thing that you're talking about, which, as you know, there's something to say for not having to schlep all around the world and stay in the hotels and do all that stuff. But it's also, it's a different challenge. Socially, I guess, to some extent, it's a challenge. And you don't get to shoot your own material, so you're kind of...
Sure. See, I like that, because I don't really like shooting, so I'd rather...
Oh, really?
I'd rather not be responsible for, like, what...
You can blame somebody else,
Exactly. I'm like, I'm sorry that Bob Haldeman is not a good cinematographer. Not my fault. So what is that difference in life for you? Is it like is it nice to not have to schlep around, or is it?
It is. I mean, I think probably the other big difference between now and Street Fight is that I didn't have kids then, or I just had a new baby, and so that she was born, you know, right as the, you know, right when Street Fight was coming out. So I was able to go to festivals much more and spend 5 days and run around.
Right.
And now I feel like most festivals I don't even go to. When I do go, I kind of go for the day of my screening and then leave the next day, or which means that you don't get those really fun moments, and you kind of, you haven't seen everybody else's films. I mean, I get a bunch of DVDs, it's not necessarily at that time. And so a lot of that community stuff, I think I miss out on just because I can't go and do those things as much as I can during that time.
You kind of also want to be like a good dad.
Sometimes.
I guess. You know, maybe that's something that might be important to you. I don't want to presume.
And it's hard. So, I mean, just the shooting, you know, requires you to be away. So there's already kind of use up all your chits then. And it's hard to say, like, oh, and can I stay 2 extra days so that I can go to parties and watch movies?
Yeah. It's like really important. You don't understand, but I go to these parties.
But
it is a different subject. But I actually don't really know. How do you like make a living? How do you do commercial work too?
No, I've just been going project to project. So So Street Fight, I sort of spent my own money. I had done internet work for a bunch of years before.
Yeah.
So I saved up some money, and I said, well, I'm going to just take a leave of absence and make a documentary, because I actually went to the company in the first place thinking, oh, this will be kind of like documentary work, because I'll be working on these interactive documentaries. And
sure.
And so so that's when I made Street Fight. So I took a leave of absence, bought a camera, shot Street Fight, I cut a trailer and took it to, you know, every foundation,
right.
PBS and HBO and all those places, and nobody would give me any money or nobody was interested. And so so I went back to the company, did one more project to kind of get more money, and then left again and just edited Street Fight in my apartment.
So you edited that yourself, right? So it was like you shot it. Okay.
Yeah. So I shot it and edited it. And then when I had a cut that was maybe 100 minutes long, I took it to PBS again, to POV, that had been sort of tracking it, but, you know, was not.
Yeah, they just want, I remember that point. Like, they're like, we don't know who you are.
Right.
So why don't you show it to us when you're almost done?
Yeah, exactly.
Which so I think is a perfectly reasonable point of view for them to have, right?
I agree. I mean, at the time I thought, oh, this is so outrageous. But they've got 100 proposals from people who've made films before, many films before, and it's very hard to make a film. And
like the chances of you making a good film were very small.
Very
which
small.
They realized, and you probably didn't realize.
Thankfully, I didn't. but so, yeah, and so then they came on board, and then ITVS put in some money. And that was how I had the money to finish it. And then I actually brought in another editor who helped me kind of tighten
finish
it down
it.
And you know, was able to get archival material and composer and color correct it and all that. And that movie has continued to kind of be a stream of funds because Cory Booker went on to become
Cory Booker.
So, you know, he's been on Oprah a couple times and she'll license clips from Street Fight for $10,000 or whatever.
Okay.
And I sell, you know, the DVDs are starting to dry up, but for years, you know, I would sell DVDs and some, you know, Corey would go talk at some lunch and they would buy 100 DVDs to give to everybody who came to the lunch. You know, whoever it was that was sponsoring the lunch would buy 100 DVDs or, and just every time he'd be in the news, there would be a new trickle of DVDs. So it was never 100,000 DVDs, but it was just always, you know, a few hundred bucks. And and then, you know, I've sold it around the world and I've sold it to Second Window, Third Window. And so that's continued to keep the money coming in. And then Racing Dreams, I just had the idea for it. I shot a trailer, wrote up a pitch.
At what point did you start, like, that film? Were you still touring around with Street Fight? Was it a year later? Was it during the post-production of
Street Fight? Well, Street Fight had a very short window. So when it premiered actually at Full Frame.
Okay.
You know, a couple weeks later.
I knew that. Yeah.
A couple weeks later, it was at Tribeca. But it was scheduled to broadcast on POV in July.
Right.
I think July, maybe August.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, and as soon as it was on TV, festivals, you know, most festivals wouldn't take it, and I couldn't.
Sure.
It had just a very compressed window. And then it sort of, when it got nominated, it got a new sort of breath of life, and that took a bunch of time, just sort of additional screenings and stuff like that. The Oscars were when is it? March, I guess. And so by March the next year. So if I finished it in April, by March the next year, things were pretty much done. So it was 1 year. And then it was after it was nominated. When did I first pitch it? I think probably that summer I shot the trailer for Racing Dreams. And that was So, and then I took it to a company that was at that point investing in films, and they said, okay, let's do it. So I got the full budget and started working on it. And that took, a year to shoot, a year plus to shoot, and, you know, maybe 18 months or probably closer to 2 years to fully edit, maybe 18 months. And that had a decent budget. So that paid, you know, I set up an office and like it would pay my office expenses and I could pay myself a salary and could pay everybody that was working on it. And so that was sort of the next chapter. And then, at the same time as I was working on that, I was also shooting If a Tree Falls.
Okay.
So
yeah.
I would just take a break from.
So that sort of overlapped. Yeah.
So that overlapped a lot, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
So
how long were you working on If a Tree Falls then, like total? Was it like 6 years, 5 years? How long?
Let's see. The guy was arrested in 2006, I want to say.
Okay, it sort of started right
and
then.
And that's what it started, yeah, because he was working for my wife when he was arrested. So that, and that's how I knew him, and that was, she came home from work, and she was like, FBI just came into the office and arrested this guy. And so, you know, a month after that, I started shooting. So,
right.
You know, it took a few weeks to sort of convince his sister to let him do it. And she had to, you know, and then he got out on bail. And when he came home, I went out to the airport and shot him. And that was the first.
Right.
So I would shoot that, but didn't do any editing until Racing Dreams was done. And as soon as Racing Dreams finished, switched over and started editing that. So that was being edited while I was out promoting Racing Dreams. Yeah. So I don't know. And I do feel I'm a little bit of like a midlife crisis where I've done this for a little while. And I'm happy. Like things have gone great, like way better than I could have ever imagined when I first started.
Mm-hmm.
And yet I still feel this little bit of kind of dissatisfaction with things, and you know, it's existential and my personality to some extent, but I also feel like I kind of know how to make documentaries, and I could do that for the rest of my life, and I would love it creatively, but the business side of the stuff really is wearing me down. Just like dealing with contracts and dealing with investors and dealing with all that stuff, it's so hard just to make a movie that all of the crap that you have to deal with on top of it feels like something that I was totally happy to do with my first movie, you know.
Well, but it was
less
exciting.
A little bit less my third. And now it's just like, oh, God, if I have to have one more argument with ITVS about whether such and such, you know, in my accounting records is an allowable expense, I'm going to shoot myself. And and I'm like, okay. Even if I could do that for a few more years, but like I don't want to be 60 or 70.
Right.
I want to still be working at that point, and I don't want to be like writing $10,000 grants when I'm 65 years old. You know.
Yeah.
And getting rejected from them. You know.
Right. Like, Marshall, don't tell me that you're getting rejected.
Oh, I get rejected all the time. Yeah.
Oh,
no,
man.
It's terrible. I understand different people have different things they want to fund. It's not like I feel like I should just get it, but I feel like.
It's really
I don't want to do it. It's hard,
you know,
and I just don't want to do that for my whole
life. Well, I mean, maybe like in some way, like you could just make another film like Street Fight where you don't need anyone else's money in some sense, right? Like if you were,
like shooting everything and editing everything. And in some ways that's what this movie is. Like I thought, like this new one that I'm doing, I thought, this will be cool. I'm going to just go back to basics. Like I really like editing and I like shooting. So I didn't actually hold the camera, but you know, it's going to be a simple shoot. We'll go, we'll set it up, I'll do the interview, and then I'll edit it. And I'm just going to, like, enjoy the craft, you know, the fun of just And it's been sort of a drag, to be honest. Like, I've wished that I had another editor here that I could be bouncing ideas off of and that I could be having, like, okay, you know how this montage is supposed to go. Just, like, just make it better and let me check back in with you instead
of
having
And I feel the same way editing this movie I'm working on because I'm doing it myself and I'm hoping that someday it won't just be me, but I don't know. I don't think anyone's ever going to fund this project. So it may just end up being me. And it's not so much that, I feel like people get the wrong idea when I complain about that. Like, they think it's like, oh, I don't want to do the work.
Right.
It's not about that. It's like, I actually think that I am smarter in conversation than I am alone. Like, when I'm alone, I'm not in conversation, and I don't think I'm making as good decisions, so the edit is just taking longer.
Yeah, and you just second-guess things that somebody else could say, like, oh, no, it's that. And you're like, I know.
Someone else could say, of course. That's obviously the right tense track for that scene.
Right.
Stop killing yourself, you know, or something. So I just feel like it's slow, and it's less fun. It's just not as much fun. I really miss having these conversations with Francisco, my editor for Our Nixon, and Brian, and, you know, just talking about the project and sharing energy and, like, having the energy be bigger than just me, because sometimes I don't have it. Sometimes I'm like, fuck this movie. Sometimes I'm like, this is never going to be a good movie. I should quit.
Many times, right?
Yeah, many times. And so, you know, it's difficult to try to, and I always tell my students this, like, here's the trick and the horrible thing about making art, no matter what you do, is that it's bad until it's good.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, it also may never be good, but even when you make a good thing,
it
was once bad.
Right.
Like, every single draft of it was bad.
Yeah.
And so you have to sit there and stare at this thing in front of you that is bad, and you know it's bad.
Yeah.
And you have to somehow convince yourself that it's not that bad.
Yeah. Well, and you have to be able to judge it correctly, like, not to... to keep changing something that's working, and also not to settle and say, like, well, this is good enough. It's so tempting to sort of convince yourself that something's not that bad, that
it's
okay.
Also, though, I think that it's the tricky thing, too, is how you interact with other people. Like, so you have your shitty rough cut. You know it's a shitty rough cut because every rough cut is shitty, and that's the bottom line.
Right.
And so, but then how do you talk about it? Let's say you take it to an investor. Like, it's a very tricky balance to sort of exude confidence about something, but also acknowledge that what they are seeing is not that good yet.
Exactly.
I don't really understand how to do that. And I feel like my attitude oscillates between, like, too confident, where they might think like, oh, she thinks this is good.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Right?
No, I feel that too. And also, my personality is very critical and very, like, what is wrong with it? What could go wrong? And I have this, like, natural desire to share that with people when I think, like, okay, so obviously this is no good, and I don't know exactly how to fix it, and this is the problem, and this is the problem, and this is the problem. Here's what could go wrong. And when I am out pitching, I just have to be like, okay, you need to take a deep breath and put on your other hat. And that is not your job right now.
Right. And also, at this point, like, you're Marshall Curry. Like, if someone doesn't understand that you know what a good movie is, like, they don't know who you are, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, like, at a certain point, like, you don't, like, you can have the confidence in yourself, and also other people can say, well, I mean, I've seen your films. They're really good films. But so this person, you know, understands what a rough cut is, and he doesn't need to justify it or, like, explain it.
I guess, but I also know that everybody's capable of not like doing a good job. Yeah, like, everybody.
Think
about Woody Allen movies. Like, I mean, he just makes these genius movies, and then he just makes these dogs. And you know, like, there's no reason to think. And particularly with a documentary where you don't even control the script and you don't even control most of the material.
Right.
Like, it is possible that we won't solve these, no matter how hard we try or how, like, talented we are or whatever.
Right,
like,
right.
And that's like, the unspoken that I have to bite my tongue on, because I don't know what the answer is going to be. And there might not be an answer. And this might not be a good movie. Like, really, it might not.
Right.
I hope it will, and I'm going to work hard, and I've had these problems before and all that, but I don't know the answer.
Yeah, I have the, I mean, I have to tell you, I completely relate to everything you're saying right now, and maybe we're just at the same stage in the process, you know, like, where we've committed ourselves. we're hopeful, and, like, I have all the hope in the world, and in my heart, I feel like this could be a fantastically good film that I think people will really respond to. But then I also think, like, this might just never, you know, like, the inherent kind of flaws that just come with it, that, you know, it's just these things, they have their own identities, right? Like, you can't graft a different identity onto a nonfiction story. Like, it just is what it is in some ways. And you have to sort of deal with the narrative issues that you have, because we chose to do it this way. We chose to work with nonfiction.
Right.
So, yeah, so, like, maybe it will be that good. I don't know. But it's just, it's very, very difficult to sort of maintain enthusiasm when you don't, I don't know. This is what I was going to ask you, too. Like, do you, when you're working, at what stages do you think about, I don't know, like how other people are going to receive something? Or at this point in your career, have you started to, like, develop kind of like a philosophy or an attitude about who your audience is and like what you expect them to care about or
yeah.
know or think about, you know what I mean? Like,
mm-hmm.
and do you feel like that's the same kind of general idea of an audience for every project, or do you not think that way?
No, I totally think about the audience. Like, this
okay.
stuff is communication for me.
Okay.
Like
okay.
it's not self-expression.
Right.
And not everybody needs to get everything.
Mm-hmm.
That's okay with me. Like, if there's a shot that I know is long because I like it long, even if I know that half of the people who were raised on MTV are going to think, that's weird that that shot was so long, that's okay with me. Because
sure.
but I want to know how everybody's going to see it. And
mm-hmm.
then I can decide whether I care enough about that or feel about it. So I think a lot about, you know, okay, so how does a conservative person see this? How does a liberal person see this? How does, like, a doc person see this? How does my mom or dad see this? We, like, don't really watch docs. How does, you know, and then I test it to
right.
all those different people as much
right.
as I can.
Right.
And I ask them to, like, be harsh and really tell me, like, what do you get? What are you bored? What do you not understand? What do you...
Sure.
And I know that not everybody will
right.
will
get everything.
Get
well,
exactly.
you wouldn't really, I mean, would you really want everyone to have the exact same experience if you're just boring? You know, like,
yeah.
if things are that simple where every single person walks away having the exact same conversation with them, it's boring. I mean, your films aren't like that. Your films
I don't
are way
know.
More complicated.
Yeah.
What do you think? No?
I don't have, like, a philosophical problem with everybody feeling the same way. I mean, Raiders of the Lost Ark, everybody feels the same way about it. It's awesome. It's thrilling and it's
there
hilarious.
There is nobody
and it's scary.
In the world who doesn't think that.
Right? I mean,
okay.
nobody, right?
Okay, okay, yeah.
So,
yeah.
But I also know that what I'm not, that's not.
You're not making Raiders.
That's not quite what I'm making, yeah. And particularly if it's about the Earth Liberation Front or whatever, like, then.
Yeah.
But I mean, you know, with Racing Dreams, spent a ton of time thinking, like, okay, how do we communicate this to NASCAR fans? How do we communicate
mm-hmm.
this to people who don't know anything about NASCAR?
Mm-hmm.
How do we communicate this to people who think that they hate racing and think that they
sure.
hate, like, white Southerners? And, like,
mm-hmm.
you know, how do you – and anyway, yeah, so I do think about all that stuff. And then there is an element of just, like, what do I like?
Sure. There
I
is.
Mean,
you said like this is communication, not self-expression. But there is an element of self-expression. You're, of course. I mean,
yes. It's less about self-expression. I mean, maybe that's self-expression. But there are. I mean, ultimately, I'm making 500,000 editing decisions.
Oh yeah.
Not all of which can ever be tested. So it's like, do I think this is funny? Do I think this is funnier when it's two frames longer? Do I think it's less funny when it's two frames shorter? You know, so
sure.
you can't test all that stuff. So ultimately, you kind of have to trust your own gut. But I also know that there have been things that I thought were very clear, and I heard
right.
three people or four people, like, I'm confused by this thing. And I can say, well, there it is. It's right here. And then they say, oh, yeah, I see it now. But
right.
I'm not going to go to every screening, and I know that. I'm not going to be able to tell everybody what idiots they are that they didn't see it. Like, that's my problem. If,
yeah.
Even if it's in there, if people
yeah.
aren't seeing it, then I have to fix it.
Yeah. No, I mean, I completely agree with you. And I guess what I was trying to figure out, too, is just whether, like, you sort of feel like, I don't know, like, people have arguments all the time about, like, whether you should assume your audience is smart or dumb. Like, I don't know if this is a conversation that people
yeah.
have around you, but I feel like I've been part of a lot of these conversations. And
yeah.
it's something that my writing partner on this film, we have arguments about, because he's sort of like, no, people are really dumb. Like, you have to like really assume that people are dumb. And he's like, I teach at Yale University and I'm surrounded by people at Yale and they're so dumb. And you just,
yeah.
you know, and I was like, no, people are smart. Like, they can figure it out themselves. So it's this kind of like ridiculous conversation. And obviously there's no answer to that, but I didn't know if you had any thoughts about that.
I guess the main thing that I like to think of when doing what you're talking about is to have there be like there's a dumb person can get through this movie.
That's
and,
exactly
but
right.
They might
yeah.
not catch everything.
Sure.
But there's yeah. nothing that yeah. you have to be smart to get to the next chapter of.
Right, right.
Like,
absolutely.
To me, that's the ideal.
Yeah.
Is that, is
yeah,
that
totally.
It's
like,
rich.
I think about,
if you
yeah.
want to look, there's richness in there.
Yeah.
But if you miss it, it's not like the movie's then suddenly not going to make sense to you.
If you just want to watch a movie to be entertained, like, this might work for you also.
Hopefully.
I think about Exit Through the Gift Shop.
Yeah.
And when I first saw that, it just blew my mind.
Yeah,
very,
yeah.
very, very influential on me.
Yeah.
And I remember I went and watched on Netflix, you know, whatever, a year later. And like 99% of the Netflix reviews say something like, excellent. Like, this is a really inspiring movie about graffiti art.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that people really loved it, but they loved it because they thought it was an entertaining, you know, inspiring movie about street art.
That's
and I was like,
inspiring. Hey. Like, if you'd asked me to come up with 100 words, that would not be one of them.
But it kind of like really made me think about exactly what yeah. you're saying. Like, it made me have a different kind of goal as a filmmaker.
Yeah.
It made me realize that, like, that's awesome. And that if I want to make movies where, like, you don't have to have, like, that level of deep engagement to enjoy it.
Right.
But that, yeah, sure, if you're, like, someone else and you want to, like, think about things in a deep way, or you know, you just have a specific, you know, entry point, maybe you're really fast, maybe you know a lot about the ELF, or maybe
right.
you know a lot about Richard Nixon, and you want to make a film that's also satisfying and intriguing to those, like, kind of expert-level people, but that... it's okay if, like, 99% of my Netflix reviews kind of, like, might, quote, miss the point.
Right.
Like, maybe that's okay. And I
yeah.
started thinking that was, like, a cool goal to sort of try to have in my head. So I do think about my audience as being, like, two different audiences. I think about that all the time.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, would this be entertaining and interesting to someone who thinks documentaries are boring?
Yeah.
Like, that's my first.
Yeah.
At first, but then, of course, like, I'm making this film for myself, and, like, I have, you know, very specific ideas about, like, nonfiction storytelling. Oh,
yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah. So, when I think of that second audience, I'm just thinking about myself. Like, what would be intriguing to me if I saw it at a film festival? What
mm-hmm.
What would surprise me?
Right.
How will I know who else to think about?
I think that's right.
I think I'm
right.
the audience. Like,
yeah. But, like, so this new film that I'm doing about a guy that goes to Libya during the uprising against Gaddafi and joins the rebels.
Yeah.
And there's a lot in this movie, and he takes a camera with him, so he films his experience while he's there. And there's a lot in the movie about filmmaking, like what a camera does to something.
Film.
Totally. I mean, yes, but also... he's using the camera to kind of create an identity for himself that
mm-hmm.
then becomes his real identity, sort of, but is he really who he appears on camera or not? And there's all
yeah.
these kinds of questions like that. And
yeah.
those are the things,
yeah.
and I just recently did a test of it, and every single person said that the movie was about a guy who went to Libya, and they described the plot of the film, but
right.
nobody said...
right.
And not one person mentioned this
right.
concept of, like, how the camera
sure.
affects things. And so that is problematic, I think. Like, in that
yeah.
case, it's
you need
too
to have,
far.
Like, your one person who is
like
with you.
Somebody
yeah.
could, and I thought, like, it's in almost every scene from, you know,
uh-huh.
he's inspired by this movie to he goes and he films, he's inspired by some other movie, and then he goes and he films, blah, 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 and then, like, Gaddafi gets killed, and people film Gaddafi getting killed, and
yeah.
everybody's filming everybody, and all
yeah.
this. And I was like, somebody could easily write a PhD thesis about this idea of, like, camera
yeah.
as self-expression in the Libyan war.
Yeah.
And or self-definition in the Libyan
sure,
war.
Sure.
And nobody was getting that. So that is something that I
mm-hmm.
have gone back and
mm-hmm.
am teasing out much more explicitly because I feel
mm-hmm.
like...
because you really care about
it.
Yeah.
It really is something
yeah.
that is part of tying this movie together that I thought, like, well, maybe people just pick it up because it's there, but they weren't, so...
right, right.
I don't know.
Yeah, no one knows, Marcia. yeah.
But it's when it goes well, it's great work. I mean, it's, right? I mean, when you get, when you're shooting and you get some, and somebody says something or something happens.
Yeah.
That is magic. It's like, I don't know. I love it. And when you have been beating your head against the scene and finally you figure out the order of these clips to make it make sense, it's, I'm just, I go home elated.
Because it's actually mostly horrible and, like, not fun.
Right. And sometimes I feel like when people ask, you know, like, if I've talked at colleges and stuff, and you must have this all the time, and people are like, should you go make documentaries? And I kind of want to be like, no. Like, if you think, I mean, I don't know, some I thought maybe I'd be a writer when I was in college, and somebody said to me, if you can think of anything else that you could do that would make you happy, do it.
Yeah.
Because it's the worst life you can imagine. Being
right. I mean,
And to some extent, I kind of want to say that to people. Like, unless you just love it.
You have to.
You can't do it. Like, it's so much harder. Everybody, it's so much harder than you think it is. When you watch a movie, you think, like, oh, that just came together.
Oh, when it works, it looks like nothing. It looks like you didn't do anything.
It looks obvious.
When you watch Street Fight, you're not sitting there thinking, like, I can't believe this guy managed to pull off this movie. You know, you're like, no, like, this is still so natural.
Like oh, just, you're lucky that he was there for that 84 minutes all those events just unfolded themselves. Yeah.
They just come in a clear way that didn't need to be explained.
Exactly.
So when it feels natural, I mean, I have to say, like, you know, I just wanted to tell you before we got the phone how much I loved If a Tree Falls. And I had not seen any of your films before that. That was the first one of your films that I saw. I went back and watched the other two after having seen it. And I remember I watched it with Brian, and Brian and I are like, we're real snobby about movies, right? Like, and I have to say, like, but for me, like, for whatever reason, and like my snobbery about kind of like what one might call social issue movies is the most extreme. Like, I have, you know, like, I just don't like I just don't like most of them. I just think that they're pandering and dishonest.
Yeah.
And kind of knowingly dishonest in ways that I can't handle, and I get really turned off really quickly by that kind of film. So, but we watched it, and we were both just like, this, we thought it just that, like, I was like, this is the standard. Like, this is the standard for what these kind of films should be like, because I am more intelligent for having watched it and not less intelligent for having watched it. And I honestly believe that most social issue films make people stupider. Like, they take things that are actually really complicated and try to make them simple. And I just don't, I think that's actually, like, I have, like, problems with that, you know, and I actually, it's not just an aesthetic thing, like, it starts to bleed into, most of it's just my aesthetic choices, right? Like, what kind of movies do I like? But then I really do think with documentary, it starts to bleed into, like, ethical problems. Like, I don't think you should make people stupider. That should not, that's a bad thing to do for the world, you know?
But
I felt like I went into that film with, like, a very simple idea about the story, or, like, you know, the little bit I knew about that guy and, like, that group and what had happened, and left the film feeling like I had more questions. And, like, all I wanted to do was, like, go on the internet and, like, follow threads and, like, learn more and start to try to, like, to come to some more conclusions. I didn't feel like I'd come to conclusions watching the film.
Yeah.
And that's why I loved it. I don't want to, you know, I just don't want to, like, have someone tell me what the conclusion is.
So,
like, you know, obviously for the sake of a story, like, as a story arc, it has to be satisfying.
Right.
Right? Like, you have to have a conclusion.
Right.
But I just wanted to tell you that.
That's nice. Thank you for telling that. I mean, that was definitely a hard thing with that movie, because I felt like this is really tricky stuff, and I'm it's not what I thought it might be when I first started shooting, and everything is more complicated all around. But of course, I've shown it to people, and it really leaves a lot of people, like, very dispirited. It's not a fun movie, and I mean, there was a big screening in Eugene when it came out, and, you know, it was full of, like, these environmental activists, and they were there, and for, like, the first 20 minutes, they're just, like, cheering at stuff, and when they burn the horse slaughterhouse, you know, people are cheering and all this stuff, and, like, slowly, the room just gets quieter and quieter and quieter, and by the end of the movie, everybody kind of, like, gets up and walks out, and I thought, I guess that's that's real, like that's true.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I kind of want. It's kind of a sucky way to leave people in a way. Like,
well,
and it makes it hard. I mean, it sort of has two things that I don't love. From a marketing perspective, it's a disaster.
Sure.
Because
environmental
group would say like, oh, this is send out a mailing list to the Greenpeace people and say you got to see this movie. Like, no.
Yeah.
Not.
Yeah.
But all from just like, you know, what's the art that you want to make and put out into the world? Part of me wants to make things that make people inspired or make people feel empowered or whatever. And but of course, I have this view of the world that is, I do think that effort matters. I do think that, you know, doing things matter. But like, I mean, somebody's pointed out like Street Fight, Cory Booker loses. Racing Dreams, the kids, like at the end of the movie, the kid's last line is, sometimes in life you don't get to do what you want to do. Like a 12-year-old kid, like going into the military because you can't, because dreams are harder than you think, and you don't get to do what you want. And then Daniel McGowan is doing, you know. And then,
so are you starting to feel like maybe you personally want to start dealing with some more inspiring material?
Sort of. I mean, maybe it's more about you. I the other day, my daughter, who's in the fourth grade, is studying the civil rights movement, and there was a video that we were watching of the children's movement in Birmingham when they like hosed the kids down, and you know it's just like all these kids are leaving school, going downtown, getting hosed, getting stuffed into trucks, like over and over, like wave after wave of people, and they totally changed Birmingham. Like they won.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think, okay, there actually are good stories out there. Like not everything is this like
murky morass of on the one hand, on the other hand.
And I feel like
but you're attracted to those kind of stories, which is obviously what I like about your films, is because so am I. Like I'm way more interested in a story that is confusing
things, yeah.
Well, it's confusing, and you're just like, I don't know how I feel about this. I mean, I want to wrestle with this. Like, I personally am going to spend the next, 5 years of my life wrestling with how to feel about this.
And
if that's interesting to me, it's interesting to me. I don't know what else would push me through a movie. I can't.
And really. If it's years, it's to engage you. Yeah, you can't just, like, know where you're going and then go there.
Okay, we should get off the phone. We've been on the phone forever. But it's so nice to talk to you, Marshall.
It's great to talk to you.
You have been listening to a Creative Capital podcast. You can find more podcasts, artist interviews, and resources for artists on our blog, The Lab. Visit blog.creative-capital.org.